Welcome to the Score Podcast.
Here's something to ponder. According to Freddie Mac, as of 2022, there were 69 million boomers, accounting for 21% of the U.S. population and 38% of total households. As of 2022, boomers were between 58 and 76 years of age. By 2035, these boomers will be between the ages of 71 and 89. That means, over the next decade, there could be a flood of homes on the market. So who's going to buy them? I'm Jeff Richardson, and welcome to another episode of the Score Podcast. The challenges facing the U.S. housing market are many. We're still using 1990s underwriting technology and standards for one. Home prices have never been higher for another, and minority home ownership has never been lower. But are we at an inflection point? Joining me today is an expert that studies these trends as close as anyone. I'm delighted to speak with Dr. Selma Hepp today, who is chief economist for CoreLogic. In this role, she leads the economics team and is responsible for analyzing, interpreting, and forecasting economic trends in real estate, mortgage, and insurance. Prior to joining CoreLogic in 2020, Selma was chief economist and vice president of business intelligence for Pacific Union International, which was later acquired by Compass, where she oversaw the vital economic and technology intelligence to drive the expanding brokerage's success. She also held the role of chief economist at Trulia, senior economist for the California Association of Realtors, and economist and manager for public policy and home ownership research for the National Association of Realtors, as well as special research assistant at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Selma frequently appears on local and national television and radio and has been widely quoted in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and many other trade publications such as National Mortgage News and Housing Wire. And she recently received the Housing Wire's Women of Influence Award in 2022. She earned her MA in economics from the State University of New York, Buffalo, and a PhD from the University of Maryland. Selma, thank you for joining the podcast and congratulations on the Housing Wire Award.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
It's our pleasure. And recently I attended a mortgage conference. I think I alluded to this in the previous podcast where the general mood was upbeat. It was like, there's no way to go up but from here, indicating that the industry kind of hit rock bottom last year. So what is your 2024 outlook for the residential single family home market?
Yeah, so I mean, I agree with you. It seemed like 2023 was really a low year in many ways, not just for the mortgage market, but for home sales activity, for just anything housing related. It was very uncertain year and all metrics sort of hit the bottom. And so, yes, I'm of the same opinion that there is nowhere else to go but up from here. And data doesn't indicate that the trends are more promising for 2024. Well, one thing in particular is that we're expecting to see mortgage rates decline over the course of the year. It's been a little bit of a bumpy ride so far this year. You know, it was looking very good after the Fed meeting in December when mortgage rates dropped like 140 basis points, and now they've gone up some. And so, you know, we have some economic trends that are preventing mortgage rates from coming lower, but eventually we will get there. The other constraint in 2023 housing market was that we had almost no inventory, right? We were at the lowest levels in history of the data that we know for available existing homes for sale. And so even if you wanted to buy a home, it was very difficult to buy a home. And as we started 2024, we started off again with more optimism towards the rates, but also with slight increases in inventory compared to last year. And in fact, in some markets, quite a bit of a jump in inventory. So, you know, the two components that are critical for a better housing market this year are both seemingly there.
Well, that's upbeat news. That's good. Wanted to go back in time a couple of months and talk a little bit about some research you put out. You put out some research around pandemic worker migration. So the question to you is how will kind of the decentralized concentration of income and employment across cities impact home prices? And what are the broader economic implications of that trend?
The pandemic period was very, very unique in the way that enabled many people to work from home. And so for the first time in history, we were decoupled from that, you know, proximity to job need for many workers. In urban economics, the way we describe the rise of these dominant cities is, you know, think about New York, maybe Los Angeles, Chicago, San Francisco. The reason why they became so dominant is you had concentration of labor, and then a lot of times the skilled labor had what we call efficiency resulting from concentration of such labor, because you had a spillover of knowledge, but you also have a spillover in terms of economic activity, the multiplier effect. Wages were higher because also to live in those places, it cost more, and so on and so forth. So now, having the first time in history that we're not tied to that location, many people did in fact leave this dominant, call them superstar cities. And they went to smaller places. You know, one good example here is people moving from San Francisco to Austin, right? Austin was a much smaller town before. And so without migration, you now again have concentration of skilled labor. You have a concentration of labor with relatively higher wages, which has put pressure on home prices. So if you think about what happened to home prices in these smaller towns or smaller metro markets where there was a lot of influx of people with higher incomes, you saw a relatively stronger rate of home price appreciation. Some markets are now contending with that because you don't have the same rate of influx of higher income population. So there's some price adjustment going on there. But nevertheless, we still have this trend of newer, smaller areas that are becoming more dominant in terms of economic activity, in terms of knowledge, in terms of creative communities, creating, you know, new technology trends and so on and so forth. But the other impact, obviously, is that there is a spillover of, you know, higher income. So when they move in, obviously, they consume local services, and the greater demand, the more wage increase for local residents as well. So that drives increase in wages of local residents as well. So you have an overall increase in local incomes in those areas. You know, so you have this decentralization in a sense of labor and skills from just few large metro areas to more of those areas, but generally being smaller areas.
That's interesting. And kind of relatedly, I mentioned some of the demographic trends in the intro, and the data that Freddie Mac put out sort of leads you to believe there could be a greater supply of homes as a result of some of these shifts. But kind of how do the demographic trends factor into your longer term projections?
Every so often we start talking about this silver tsunami that we're so worried about, which basically refers to baby boomers aging out of home ownership. You know, one thing you know for sure is that you're going to be a year older next year, right? That's the only thing we can forecast for sure. You know, so we do know that, you know, baby boomers are aging, and we do know the stats you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast about how big of a component they are in the current housing market. So as they age out, they obviously let go of some of that housing supply that we so desperately need. The other hand, when you think about the current housing supply being so constrained, and to what extent that holds housing activity back, and how long would it take us to actually bring supply back to the levels where you have some balance between buyers and sellers, it would take a really long time. But that's going to happen in some way naturally as baby boomers age out. Yes, there is going to be more inventory available as baby boomers age. The issue really is that we are so significantly undersupply, and by the time that baby boomers, their aging out of home ownership does start impacting supply levels, you'll really see much more appreciation in home prices, you know, before that even happens. So yes, there is a point at which we'll see more supply from baby boomers, but that doesn't address the issue with undersupply that we have at the moment. So down the road, we do think the housing market is going to be in a better balance. We'll see more affordability as a result of this, but not at the moment.
So home prices, as you just mentioned, continue to climb. Is that inevitable that this will continue, or are there some factors that might foretell a reversal of that trend?
Yeah, I mean, it's never guaranteed, right? You know, when you think about U.S. economic conditions, you know, there's always a potential or a probability of a recession. You know, in fact, majority of forecasters always have some rate, you know, whether it's a third or two-thirds probability of being in a recession over the course of the next 12 months. So there is always that things can always slow down considerably. You can have, you know, always another what we call black swan event, which is a unforeseen event that has a significant impact on economic activity. The other thing is, you know, if you do have notable slowing of the economic activity, that generally is accompanied with large layoffs. So you have then people not having their incomes, they can't pay for their mortgages, they ended up defaulting, right? And that leads to more inventory. So if in fact there is, you know, some combination of the two and you have a supply shock, that would be a scenario under which you could see home prices in fact declining. But our forecast at CoreLogic is for home prices to continue to increase, albeit at a slower pace, and actually even slower than we saw going into the pandemic. So prior to the pandemic, home prices were up on average about 5% a year, and we're now looking at about 3% forecast for 2024.
Interesting. Well, we've spoken a lot about home ownership and home prices, but I want to touch on rent a little bit. Can you speak to the impact that inflation has had, and can you offer any predictions around what will happen with rent prices in the coming year?
You know, housing is the largest component of what we call the inflation basket or consumption basket. It's, you know, anywhere from 30 to 40%, depends what all you're accounting for, but it is the largest component. And so obviously it is very important now to pay attention to it in light of anticipation of what the Federal Reserve is going to do in terms of monetary loosening going forward and how that impacts mortgage rates and so on and so forth. But the issue right now with the rent component of the inflation is that it's really reflecting changes that we saw in the market some 9 to 12 months ago. The way this data is collected, it always shows changes that are actually happening on the ground some 9 to 12 months later. So as a result of that, we still see pressures on shelter inflation within the CPI measure because it's showing us what happened, you know, last year at some point. Because rents, similarly to home prices, surged during the pandemic, and they, in fact, quadrupled in many areas from the trends that we saw pre-pandemic. And so now we are sort of working our way through that measure. It's almost like a pig in a python. So those changes are now slowly working through the inflation measure. The changes in actual rents are working through the inflation measure. But based on the data that we have, that's more recent data, basically, you know, industry data on rents at the moment, do show that rent growth has returned back to pre-pandemic level. We have our single family rent index at CoreLogic, which it's a leading indicator to the OER, owner's equivalent rent, a component of the inflation measure. And according to that, we know that the shelter inflation is continued to decelerate over the course of the year and be back at pre-pandemic levels by some point at the end of this year.
I suppose that's good news for renters then. Selma, this was super informative. Thank you for joining the podcast, and I hope that we can have you back and check in on all those forecasts.
Absolutely. I would love to come back.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We've said it before on the Score podcast. Home ownership is the lifeblood of wealth creation and generational wealth transfer in the United States. It is the key to solving the racial wealth gap. As Selma mentioned, there are fundamental shifts that are and will continue to occur that have profound impact on how we build, buy, and sell homes in the U.S. Demographic shifts, how and where we work, to name a few. Careful but proactive policies must get ahead of these trends. And considering the fact that we still use outdated credit scores, we should have deep concerns about the lack of urgency. The good news is that we've solved for the credit scores and we'll start using VantageScore 4.0 for GSE-funded mortgages soon, but that's actually where the journey begins. I'm Jeff Richardson, and I look forward to our next conversation.
The views and opinions expressed in this episode do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of VantageScore Solutions. Visit VantageScore.com to learn more.